You certainly don't hear anything.
Hello?
There you go.
The recording has started.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. This is the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group meeting on the 10th of May. Thank you all for joining, and this is Julie Hedlund, and I'd like to give a roll call for those on the call at this moment. We have our two co-chairs, Edmund Chung and Jeremy Hitchcock. Also joining us are Jim Galvin,
Ron Bellingham,
and we have Ram Mohan. Thank you. Bob Hutchinson and Rafiq Damik, both who currently are off the call, but I think will be rejoining shortly. From staff, we have Dave Piscatello, Steve Shang, and myself. Have I missed anyone? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Julie. I just dialed back in. This is Bob Hutchinson.
Hi, Bob. Great. I think we'll have you on mute. Stay on the call, but we're still getting an echo. Okay. Thank you very much, Bob. Everyone, welcome. I wanted to note that we've had some very helpful discussion on the list with respect to an issue that I think bears some further discussion, and that is with respect to transliteration. And in particular, there's been some discussion on how transliteration might be handled and whether or not there are tools that could be used. And Steve, I wonder if I could ask you just to repeat the questions and maybe if you could summarize a little bit of the discussion around this topic that's been on the list.
Yes, sure, Julie. Thank you. I think I asked three questions on the mailing list. The first question is I asked the working group if they are aware of any programming libraries that can transliterate most of the world scripts into U.S. ASCII. The basis for this, the reason that I asked this question, is because in one of the proposed models that we are considering, Model 3, we asked that registrars transliterate the registrant's input into U.S. ASCII. And there were some concerns that this might be too costly, so it's not really feasible. So I want to ask, are there any programming libraries that can do this automatically so that, you know, it's cost feasible? So that's the first question. And the second question is, if the answer to the first question is yes, then I want to ask, can these programming libraries and APIs be integrated into the registrar's backend system easily? So the first two questions are essentially together, basically asking, you know, is it possible to do this, you know, relatively with low cost? And the third question, I think, is more of a policy question, is, would the transliterated result, you know, along with the local script? So what I envision is in the Whois, you have the local script in there, and then also the transliterated in U.S. ASCII for that local script. So the question is, would that be enough use for registrants and users of Whois? So those are the three questions that I ask and the rationales behind those questions.
This is Julie. Thank you, Steve. I know we had several different responses. Did you get any sense that we were getting a consensus in the responses? There seemed to be a variety of responses to the questions.
Yeah. So in terms of the first question, a couple of people have pointed me a couple of libraries. So the one library is the Google API for transliteration that I use to transliterate web pages. This is the web API. There's also a Microsoft has a translation utility. And several Java applets and window applications for transliterations. So there are some Java APIs for transliterate. In terms of whether I'm not certain, you know, a couple working group members says answer to the first question is no. For example, Andrea said, no, but if ISO or accepted locally tables exist, it can be done easily. So I'm not a real technical expert on that area, so I'm not sure whether that means a firm no or if there's a possibility there. So I'd like to see if people call.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
So I think for that such API depends to the language. At least I know one. It's the YAML API for Arabic. It's more used even than the Google API. And I was in contact with the guy behind that company developing such tools. And my understanding that is not just tables but small rules, etc. So, and such implementation depends to the language. So I'm not sure that we can have uniform solution for our language. And I'm not sure how we in this working group we can deal for each language if we can find just one solution.
This is Julie. Was that Rafiq?
Yes, he is.
And if I could remind all of you for the recording and the transcript to please announce yourself when you're going to speak. But thank you, Rafiq. That's very helpful. I wonder if I could encourage other members on the working group to comment on this. In particular, I think Rafiq has raised an important point, and that is that while there may be some various APIs out there, it's not perhaps clear that there is a uniform solution. If there is no uniform solution, I guess my question to the working group would be, is it useful still to have a recommendation relating to transliteration, even if there is no uniform solution?
This is Edmund. I'd like to, you know, sort. I understand that there are the three questions, and I think, you know, all of it actually relates to the third question, which is what we're going to use for it. And you know, that's sort of the policy question, I would say. And then we should look back at what quote unquote transliteration really means. And I think I brought this up a couple times before. The question is whether, at least in my mind, the question is, what do we want to use it for? Who would be using this information? And then decide what type of transliteration or any type of representation in a let's say ASCII form would suffice for the policy matter. Because the reason, you know, if I give a more specific example, is that let's say a Chinese address or some. As an example, the question is, you know, if do we need an ASCII representation of which such that people who do not understand Chinese can at least try to do something with it. But the question is whether I would need to be able to actually send a mail to that address and reach the right person, because the latter is much more difficult. But if we only have some sort of ASCII representation for things like, for example, just comparing data, then that would be an entirely different proposition. So, you know, if it's somewhat needs to be able to be actually used by humans to send a postal mail, then we have a much bigger challenge, and also then we would have to look into what types of standards or transliteration or romanization is necessary. But if it is only for some sort of comparison so that at least we can operate with the data, then the requirements might be quite different, and we might be able to tolerate different registrars using different and even different registrants using different ways of transliterating data.
So this is Jim Galvin. I agree with Edmund, and let me just characterize the question a little bit differently. I like the idea that we should provide some transliteration. There should be nice if there was a baseline, and we could suggest and recommend to people to provide information at some baseline. I struggle with how to make that a requirement, and more importantly, what the motivation is for making that a requirement. I think we've identified a number of issues with insisting on transliteration and in insisting on things. You know, we obviously can't continue with things being required to just be an ASCII. I'll just turn that around. I mean, there are issues, and then there are requirements that come up, which by themselves create an issue. So I think I'm just struggling with what's the motivate. What is the end goal? What is it we're trying to achieve? If we're trying to achieve internationalization, then it's not clear to me that a requirement about transliteration is the right thing to do, and I think we could still provide some advice about it. We're just not going to be able to provide something uniform.
Thank you, Jim. This is Julie. Any comments on that question from the work group members? So this is Julie. So Jim, I heard you say that, really the fundamental question is it necessary to make transliteration a requirement? I mean, and that is, what exactly are we trying to achieve? And perhaps we could provide advice, but not, not any kind of mandatory recommendation. And I know we've been talking around this topic, I think, for several calls. Does anybody have a sense that we need to have a uniform recommendation or a recommendation concerning some kind of uniformity around transliteration? Is this even a necessary requirement?
But this is Rom. I guess my perspective is that we should recommend some basic guidelines, kinds of information that ought to be made accessible, but not requirements. So they'd be, I would suggest making it more recommended to do a best practice rather than a must do.
This is Julie. Thank you, Ron. That's very helpful. Other comments?
This is Jeremy. I'd probably echo similar comments to Rom, just because if you have a number of entities that are all doing transliteration, regardless of how it's done or how strong or how detailed the recommendation is, for the most part, scripts getting transliterated into ASCII representation are going to have differences. They might be as minute kind of in the technical side of uppercase, lowercase sensitivity, and in terms of trying to use them for string comparison might turn up to be difficult, or if it's used for postal or location or identification mechanisms, then the actual inherent script of the local language is going to be the more important of them. So I'm not sure that the transliteration is going to provide much value. It would seem like the actual underlying characters are more important to capture and be able to be represented in some form or fashion.
Julie, thank you, Jeremy.
This is Steve.
Please go ahead, Steve.
So does that mean that that you think, Jeremy, that you think Model 2 would be kind of a better fit in terms of the three models? So just a quick recap of the three models. The first model is require U.S. ASCII from registrant, and optionally they may put registration data in their local script. The second is no requirement for U.S. ASCII. Registrant provides registration information in whatever script that registrars accept. So that's the second one. And the third one is provide transliteration service. The registrar provides a transliterated result into WHOIS. So it seems that the working group is thinking that transliteration will be an option instead of a requirement. So would that make a Model 2 the recommended one, or no?
So this is Jim. I have a question to add to this. And I apologize because I've missed the last couple of meetings, and I haven't quite gleaned the answer to this question out of looking at the meeting summaries. But there was a time when we were talking about providing this transliteration service, and I thought it was about registrars making that available in some way, not necessarily automated. We seem to have moved into a space of this needs to be an automated service in some way. And I guess I'm trying to understand where that requirement came from or why that was the way to deal with it. If a registrar is going to be allowed to present things in their local language for their local users, and that's essentially the primary use of the WHOIS information, at least in that place, where did the requirement for this being automated come from? And is that, can we make that distinction in your particular list of questions, Steve? Is embedded in your questions the requirement that it be automated, or are we allowing for an option that says it could still be a manual thing that if somebody needs a translation, they could reach out to a registrar and get some help in getting that done?
Sure, Jim. So in Model 2, we have a registrar provide a point of contact to deal with this translation issues. So that's what you're mentioning, is that scenario is covered. And what we the Model 3 considered is, instead of registrar providing a point of contact, the registrar does the translation or transliteration on behalf of the registrant. So that was the original proposal. And then after I put that in the working group deliberations, basically there's a couple of people in the working group felt that manual translation is way too expensive. I mean, currently the profit margin for registrars is already very low, and if we want to impose a requirement on them to do the translation, that's not feasible for them. And then there's another suggestion saying any system, IT system that developed will be much cheaper than having actual people maintaining or doing the translation. So that's the direction we think. Maybe having some kind of an automated system would revive Model 3. And I also recall in one of the working group discussions, they said that translation is not really needed. It's only transliteration that what we really need. So I think that's currently how it comes to being.
But I guess that's your last comment there is exactly, well, it's not exactly, but that's kind of my point. And it goes back to what Edmund asked earlier and you know, what I asked too, a follow-up. What is the motivation for this stuff? I mean, in the early conversations about this issue, you know, law enforcement is the sort of the canonical example. You know, you're trying to research and find out who owns a domain name and learn something about it. And where people outside of the region of where this registrar and the registration exists are trying to learn something about the domain. And that's the purpose
right.
of the transliteration service.
Right.
And if that's the only purpose of it, you know, how often does it happen? How frequently does it happen? You know, in, when we were talking about it in that context, there was not expected to be a lot of transliteration, and so cost should not be a significant factor. So I'm trying to understand where this, having missed some of the discussions, I obviously, you know, missed something in here, but what was the motivation for requiring this thing to be automated and make this investment in transliteration?
Right.
This is actually, Steve, if I could just jump in. This is
Go
Julia. I think, Jim, there might be a slight misunderstanding. We weren't, as staff, suggesting that this would be a requirement for automation. It was a question that was asked because if we do think that there would be a need for transliteration, then that, if we want to keep costs down or if we don't want to require a manual process, the question was raised simply for the purpose of discussion as to whether or not there were automated systems that could do transliteration. And I should point out that as staff, we're simply trying to see if we can help move the discussion along. We're not suggesting, you know, particular requirements. We're really trying to see if there's any consensus around a particular set of recommendations, which we've gathered into these three models. But I think getting back to your main question, and then this is really where we're trying to go with this, is there a need for a requirement for transliteration if it is something that would only be used seldom? Or is this just something that we could leave off the table as far as requirements, but have, as Ram has suggested, and you have suggested, some guidelines relating to transliteration?
Right. This is Steve again. I think Julie summarized what I want to say, the first part very well, that we're only raising the question for discussion purpose. Are there anyone from law enforcement on the line that perhaps, any law enforcement, IP?
This is Dave. Can I interject on, I don't want to necessarily say on behalf of either of those constituencies,
okay.
but as an observation.
Right.
You know, Rob has suggested that perhaps transliteration would be something that we can encourage as best practice. Unfortunately, the people who are most likely to ignore a best practice are probably the people who, could serve as a locus for malicious domain registration. And so the situation that I believe that it's someone who's involved in anti-spam or anti-phishing is concerned about is one where it is impossible to act on a malicious domain because the information that is acquired from who is not useful, meaning it's not something that is easily understood. Now, there are two things that you could imagine. One is that that someone from an anti-phishing or anti-spam environment would like to be able to rely on the registrar who has actually created the registration to provide him with some assistance. The second is that, you know, as long as he has UTF-8, he can go and find something like, you know, Google's software or one of the other software that we've talked about on the list, and do a best guess transliteration. One way to look at this is that as long as there is enough in the whois record to make it to make the transliteration somewhat precise or somewhat accurate, then it really doesn't matter whether the registrar is involved in transliteration or not.
Sorry?
And who was that? Go ahead.
Traffic. Just I was wondering about something. We talked about like Google API, etc., but maybe it's such API can raise a problem of privacy. We don't know how Google is managing this kind of data, because with such API we have to type also. I remember there was kind of polemic when Google provided how we can type in for Japanese in Japan, and so some people was wondering if Google can collect data when we use such tools. So maybe we need an open solution, etc., for the privacy issue.
We're talking about two different circumstances. I mean, in the case of a registrar, I would not think that a registrar, especially one who has to deal with local privacy regulations, would just simply type into Google's public app and do a transliteration there. And certainly, I agree with you, you'd probably want to find some open source or licensed software that you can rely on to set the parameters for privacy. But I was referring more to somebody who's, like Jose Sauve, University of Oregon, who does a whois query, gets back something unintelligible, and, the fastest, most convenient tool is a Google app that allows him to enter the UTF-8 and see something that looks like English to him, so he can then find the registrar or find the registrant and make a best effort in contact.
This is Ram. I'd like to be in the queue.
This is Julie. Ram, go ahead. I think you're the only one right now in the queue. Do we have any others?
This is Steve.
Edmund as well.
I heard Ram, and then after Ram was, before Edmund, I didn't hear who that was.
Steve.
Okay. Ram, Steve, Edmund, please.
And Jim, too, when on your list. Thanks.
Great. I've added you, Jim.
Thank you. This is Ram. Three specific things I want to comment on. First is I am wary of unfunded mandates. I am quite concerned that if we mandate that transliteration must be provided and we depend on what is currently a free tool, Google or something like that, tomorrow that could change, and we are then adding a cost burden, across the spectrum, which eventually will get passed down to the end user. And so if we're going to do it, then we should then consider the economic impact and ensure that we provide some funding for the mandate as well. That's one thing. The second is that, as we all know, all transliteration is going to be a best guess methodology anyway. I mean, it's not going to be really accurate in the real sense of the word. You have to know the language in order to actually be accurate. So the reason why I'm suggesting that it remain a guideline and not a mandate, the second reason is because it is inherently a flawed process and inherently an inaccurate and potentially invalid process. I worry about creating a rule that by its very definition is going to be broken from the very first day of implementation. The third is that we're really talking about the world's languages, and there is a ton of them out there. And I would suggest some caution in how expansive we want it to be. If you want to make this happen, two or three prerequisites, it seems to me, are required. First of all, the existing WHOIS port 43 mechanism, that protocol, so to speak, has to be replaced. That's got to be a core prerequisite recommendation with some teeth to it that it actually that conversion happens. Because that's the only way you can actually accommodate the UTF-8 representation. But let's just keep in mind that if you want to have Azerbaijani automatically transliterated into something, and no API anywhere has converted Azerbaijani into some other language, you're pretty much going to get stuck anyway. So those are my three thoughts. Thank you.
This is Julie. Thank you, Ram. Next in the queue is Steve.
Hi, I'd like to be added to the queue at some point. This is Jeremy.
Thanks.
So although we've been talking about law enforcement or IP community, it seems to be they're the main users who benefit from the transliterated WHOIS. I think, the larger picture is also there are also, there are users of WHOIS other than IP lawyers and law enforcement, and these often reside in different countries and do not know each other's language. So in today's world, since English is more of the common language, if it's in U.S. ASCII, they are more likely to reach out to the other registrant in a different country. If we require, any language goes into WHOIS, it might make them harder to contact. So this is one consideration where, we kind of put some backward compatibility, usability of WHOIS in the IDN world. So that's one thing. But I hear Ron saying that the existing port 43 WHOIS has to be replaced to accommodate a UTF-8 representation. Ron, can you? I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a bit, because that seems to be a very important issue.
Should I respond, Julie?
Adam, with the queue.
Okay, this is Ron. Steve, very quickly. Port 43 only supports ASCII.
What about the mechanism that, Jay has been raised, like flagging character set in input?
Steve and Julie, actually, this is Edmund, and my comments and questions feed right into this.
Perfect.
So I think a couple of things before I jump right into this. First of all, Steve and I think Dave earlier mentioned about some way of law enforcement and IP to somehow have some intelligible data. And I think that argument is kind of interesting, but I don't see the difference between law enforcement or IP trying to dig through the data using Unicode code points versus ASCII, because really, in terms from at least from my perspective and from people I've worked with, a lot of it is about pattern matching. So you would pretty much use similar tools to do pattern matching based on ASCII data, as well as it could be used on Unicode data as well. Of course, there would need to be some adjustments to the tools that are being used. But I think ultimately, if you say quote unquote the bad guys, as much as they would They would also put garbage data for any type of whether it's in ASCII form or English or IDN or multilingual form. That's going to be the case regardless. So I don't think that is as much a argument if you look at it in terms of providing a particular language or transliteration for the data. But instead, I think this concept about backwards compatibility is maybe something that we want to look into. I think Ron made a good point in that the WHOIS doesn't at least port 43 doesn't allow characters beyond the I think it's 7-bit ASCII, in fact. So even with flagged type of thing, you would have to have a format. The question is whether we want to have a format that is backwards compatible to existing WHOIS tools, and that might be something we want to look into rather than sort of transliteration. So perhaps if I may sort of suggest a fourth model whereby it would be so the registrant or registrar would provide the data in local languages, but they would also need to provide some sort of backwards compatibility for port 43. Whether that's something that we want to make as a requirement rather than transliteration, and so-called backwards compatibility, that type of data may really only be used by machines rather than human. Because I think coming back to the law enforcement and IP guys, in fact, general users, there might be a lot of tools already out there that is sort of parsing WHOIS data that it might actually be useful for some sort of backwards compatible format, and that format might be information that's in ASCII, but let's say a string of code points in their code point numeric format, for example. That actually helps a lot of machines to be able to read that information without having a lot of changes. That provides some sort of backwards compatibility, but it doesn't put much of a strain on in terms of resource for having to do transliteration or any form that's more human readable.
Thank you, Edmund. I have two others in the queue. I have Jim Galvin and then Jeremy Hitchcock. Jim?
Okay, thank you, Julie. I have three points. First, I don't think there's any question that transliteration is a good thing, but I still keep coming back around to the question, what is the goal? What is the problem that we're trying to solve? I mean, as I understood it, it was about use of the information out of the region, or whatever definition of region that you want to offer. Law enforcement is the obvious canonical example, but certainly there are others. And the question always comes back to what is the size of the community, and to go to the point that Ron was making about where are we putting the burden here when we say we have to have this service. Dave made the observation that as long as it's possible to transliterate it, then maybe that's sufficient, and that shouldn't be our focus here. So that brings me to my second point. I really think that we want to focus on the representation of the data, not on transliteration in particular. So focusing on the use of UTF-8 in the presentation of WHOIS material. That takes us back to Ron's suggestion about, maybe we recommend the items that are of general utility, and insofar as one wants to offer transliteration or, you want to ensure broad usage of your data, we make a list of that bit of information, which is core information that everybody needs to have. They need to be able to offer it out in a UTF-8 format if that's what we want to go, so that people who need to use it can develop their own applications and find their own way to transliterate it if that's what they need. Presumably, if the WHOIS information is primarily for the use of the region, transliteration is not an issue. It's for those outside of the region, and they should have the burden of solving that problem for themselves. Brings me to my third point, which ties into what Edmund was just saying about providing back compatibility. I make the following observation. The transition of electronic mail from U.S. ASCII to 8-bit covered this in quite a lot of detail. You know, one of the requirements for the introduction of MIME when it first came out, the multi-part internet mail extensions, was complete backwards compatibility with 7-bit ASCII mail. Whatever they did in order to introduce 7-bit things had to have 100% backwards compatibility. And I really think that that's possible even in this situation. It may be that we want to change ports, and it's not port 43 anymore, but I think that from a technical point of view, there is a means to say you can still use U.S. ASCII on that port. And, oh, by the way, if you're, you know, if you can understand other things, here's the mechanism by which you can have 8-bit sequences coming across there or use UTF-8. So I don't think that this is a hard problem. If it could be solved for email, it can certainly be solved here. Those are my points.
Thank you very much, Jim. This is Julie. Jeremy, you were in the queue.
Can I ask, this is Dave, can I ask for a clarification on what I think I heard Jim say?
Go ahead, Dave.
Jim, did you say that the onus is on parties outside the region to solve the problem of not being able to recognize the local language in which a registration was submitted?
Yes, I put that out there as a model in all of this. You know, rather than putting the burden on the registrars to provide a service for those outside of the region, those outside the region should bear the burden of that service. And that was in part in response to your suggestion that if there are free services like Google and other kinds of things, they have a means to at least start the transliteration process.
So, well, I mean, just as an observation, the end effect of that is that everybody has to solve it for every language except their local one. Right, because ultimately, almost any registrar is going to get, you know, have some occasion where there's going to be some language, you know, that, you know, of a, you know, it, that a domain submitted in that, you know, that is not recognizable, you know, and they're going to have to display it through their WHOIS.
Two comments to that. I mean, I see where you're going with this, and I agree with you. I'm not suggesting that I've got the 100% complete answer, but in the interest of discussion about this, you know, there's always the question of choosing the base language that you want everything to go to. So, you know, you want to put the burden back on the registrars to transliterate, then now we have to have a discussion about what's the base language. And then you get into the point that Ram was making about, you know, transliteration is not trivial. There's always issues. It's not a perfect process. It takes a lot of experience and knowledge in order to make all of this happen. So that's one point. The other thing is, I still question, what is the size of this problem space? Who needs access to this transliterated information outside of the region? And how big is that? And so, I mean, to me, that factors into the economics of where you put the burden.
So
this is right.
Yeah.
Let Jim remain. I'd like to get in the queue.
Yeah, I hear Ram, but I know, Jeremy, did you want to? You were still in the queue, and we haven't heard from you. Did you want to make a comment before we move ahead?
I would. I'll answer a question that was asked to me a while ago too. So just a couple of quick things, and then we can get back in this discussion. But I wanted to point out that the tools for anything have to be local. Can't rely on an API that is, you know, available or unavailable. You know, is available today, but may not be available at a later time, and considering that we haven't really, I mean, there hasn't been an exhaustive search, but it does not look like there are tools that are widely available for all the universal languages or all of the languages that exist in the world. So that's kind of a concern, as Ram had mentioned. Now, I think another thing that's important to point out is it has to be done kind of in a common way or in a common fashion. Otherwise, the value, you know, for whatever the value of transliteration is going to be pretty reduced. To answer kind of Steve's question, in the sense of models, I have more faith that far-flung registrars, you know, and meaning non-American English or Western Europe English-speaking entities, either registrars or registries, can correctly represent their own script and their own encodings rather than relying on them to translate or transliterate to a particular standard. So I think I'm more, you know, again, personal opinion just based on the discussion, that there's more opportunity for registrars, registries, and registrants to choose entities that know how to support their particular languages, and requiring them or potentially boxing them out of participating with different service providers because they don't, quote-unquote, support a language, I think would be something that we may want to avoid. So in that sense, I guess it's the allowing registries and registrars to choose to support languages that are local themselves, which I guess is the second model. I do want to kind of go back to the who is asking for the service. We've heard a couple times that transliterating is useful, but I'm wondering about the requirement to have a common technology platform to represent uniform scripts versus a common script to represent languages in a single format. I mean, I think that the distinction doesn't sound that subtle, but it makes a huge difference of whether or not we provide a service on a particular port that can provide particularly any language in different types of encodings, or we provide a single script that, quote-unquote, represents languages, and just thinking of the sheer scale of the languages that are out there, that seems like a pretty tall order, and I don't think we have nearly the expertise to think about all the languages and all their representations and all their transliterations, even if we're just thinking about translating to 8-bit ASCII. I mean, I don't even know if that's even possible, and I don't think we have the expertise in this group to say whether that is or is not. I'm sure that there's some language sets that just can't be represented in that format, and I don't know if we want to make such a huge recommendation or a huge requirement that some of the languages can't be represented. So, just my bubbled up thoughts, but let the discussion go on the topic.
This is Julie. Thank you, Jeremy. Ram, you're in the queue, and Dave.
Thank you. Very briefly to Jim's question about how big is the demand, I think we should look at a different question, which is when you need to get that data, how urgent do you need it? And I think that is the real question here. If you've got a problem with the domain name and you need to do something about it right away and you can't make out head or tail of what's in the name or who owns it or who the registrar is, then you're in real trouble. So I think that focus should be less about how many people are going to use it or how big the problem is, and much more about how severe an emergency would it be. And I think that should be another facet, not just the volume, the quantity, but also the urgency. Thank you.
Thank you, Ram. Julie. Dave?
I'm actually sort of lost at this point, so I'll give up my slot in the queue. We've gone down too many tangents, and I can't trace back to what it is that we're now trying to accomplish.
This is Julie. Perhaps I can. I've been taking, I think, pretty close notes here, and of course I'll summarize this conversation. But I've heard, I think, some interesting and I think helpful suggestions. In particular, I'd like to go back to a suggestion that Edmund has made, and perhaps we can discuss this. And it was also something that that Jim hit on as well. And that was perhaps what we have is a fourth model, where the registrars provide the information in a local script, and then also backwards compatibility to port 43 or other WHOIS applications, instead of a requirement or guidelines concerning transliteration. And Edmund noted this could be ASCII and a code point numeric format that could be something that could be machine readable. And I know that Jim mentioned also the backwards compatibility, and it might be possible, but perhaps not on port 43, but we might want to change ports. I'm wondering if others have comments on this
suggestion of perhaps a fourth approach.
Julie, this is Steve. I wish to be added to the queue.
Steve, I think you were the first in the queue, or are there others? Please go ahead.
Actually, now I'll back in, because
okay, please, go ahead, Steve.
Edmund, I was wondering if you could clarify more a little bit about what goes into the backward compatibility, like what data is part of the backward compatibility. So to clarify, we talk about translation and transliteration, and those are only focused on the registrant's name and the contact address. All the other WHOIS data elements, we've talked about ways to internationalize them. So, for example, we talk about the registrar's name has to be in U.S. ASCII. We talk about telephone numbers. We talk about email address. Those have its own standards. So in terms of, backward compatibility for port 43, I was wondering if you could clarify more, like what data goes in there. Thanks.
Right. I guess very quickly, it's really as you understand there. We went down the path of transliteration, and I guess the idea is to have it in U.S. ASCII transliterated, because you can also transliterate it into, for example, Arabic characters or Russian characters, right? So that sort of led me into thinking about, rather than saying transliteration, that there should be a form where it's backwards compatible to port 43, and I think it's overall rather that and some registrars could implement it using transliteration into U.S. ASCII. Some could be a different format, but that's really just it. There's no, I don't really have any idea on further details there.
Okay, thank you.
Dave.
So I remember Jim had mentioned MIME, Jim, the question I would have is whether you would foresee the ability to establish some convention where people would say, I'm going to do a WHOIS query, and I'm going to have some indicator that says I expect mine in my response as opposed to I'm able to process mine formatted data as opposed to purely ASCII 7.
This is Julie. Jim, did you want to respond?
Sure. What I imagine could happen here in terms of completely supporting backwards compatibility too, right? WHOIS protocol is I send in U.S. ASCII a token, right, with a carriage turn new line at the end, and I pump that at port 43, and then I get back a whole chunk of U.S. ASCII data, right? So what we do is you simply say that you have a formatted string that's allowed to appear as the first few characters in that, and that allows the querier to then say some things, and we could spend a lot of time discussing about what kinds of things they might say, but you could even go so far as to say if I get this special front string of characters, then I know I'm going to get a multi-line query, and I have to read in all of that query. And that just means that on the response side, I can then return a MIME object. What the heck? I'll start with content type multi-part related, and I'll dump at you all kinds of stuff. And then I get all of MIME to be able to come back to me. And the only thing that's required on the server side is an 8-bit clean implementation, and the ability to check queries for this magic token in the beginning that tells me I'm now doing extended stuff.
Okay, that's what I expected you to answer. So what we would have at that point is another alternative to Iris and RESTful, which would be MIME, as a way to migrate from an existing highly limited WHOIS to something that would be would provide a richer data environment.
Yeah, I mean, the only benefit of this versus the other things, and I guess I don't really want to create competition for other solutions, but what you get here is you get to continue to use port 43. Nothing that you're doing now changes. You have complete backwards compatibility with the installed base, and those
right.
who know more get to ask for more, and they get more.
And that's what I want to tease out those little details, because those are the kinds of things that we probably should make the broader community aware that we've discussed. So, you know, so this would be something that has a benefit. And then comparing the use of MIME versus XML in the RESTful case would be something that again would be, you know, would be something that we could explore.
Hey, MIME is just a framework. The data inside could still be XML.
And all those details are things that people are going to have to understand to know the cost. I mean, Ram began part of this discussion on what was the beautiful euphemism he used, unfunded mandates. So rather than throw an unfunded mandate out without any sense of the size of the task, it's useful to say whether it's mandate or not, here are the things you have to consider in order to be able to support IRD. And here are the choices.
This is Julie. Thank you, Dave. Thank you all. Are there more comments? We're now at 2 minutes past the hour, and I would obviously certainly encourage all of you to continue this discussion on the list, and I think as staff we can try to summarize this discussion and send some notes out. But also perhaps we can, I think this last discussion in particular of a possible another way of addressing backwards compatibility is one that we should definitely continue. Any further comments before we finish up the call?
Hi, Julie, this is Steve.
Yes, please go ahead, Steve.
I think Ram raised a very important question. That is, the existing port 43 has to be replaced to accommodate UTF-8 representation. I think this needs more discussion, and this will have a far more implication to who is than any of the policy work that we have done so far. And if this is the recommendation of the of this working group, then this could have quite some policy implications because the GNSO is looking particularly to the expertise of the IRD group in one of their WHOIS studies about not able to display IDN characters.
So Steve, let me just respond very, very quickly to that issue. I make the observation that SMTP, when it was originally deployed, right, the mail transfer protocol was 7-bit US ASCII, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have MIME, 8-bit mail, arbitrary content now being distributed and used over SMTP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so replacing port 43 is certainly an option if that's where you want to go, but I make the assertion that it's not essential in order to transition to an 8-bit environment.
Okay.
We have a work example.
Right. Jim, it's not really that's where I want to go. It's where the community wants to go. I think that's very... want to clarify that. Yep.
Right. With this, Julie, I think that, this discussion at the end of this, this last discussion and what Jim has described, and I'd like to see this perhaps laid out a little bit more on the list, is this idea of, having a solution that's backwards compatible to port 43. And if that is indeed a solution, then it would that port 43 does not have to be replaced. Am I characterizing that correctly, Jim?
That's correct. Thank you.
Any other comments before we close the call? Then I want to thank everybody for participating today. Thank you very much. And to our two chairs, in particular, Jeremy and Edmund. I will summarize this call and get some notes out tomorrow. We'll also try to see if we can continue the discussion on this idea of backwards compatibility and perhaps see if it might work into a sort of a fourth model or another approach.
And our next call will be in 2 weeks. And I would let everybody know, too, that we will be having a public forum at the Brussels ICANN meeting. We don't have it scheduled yet, but we will have, if not preliminary recommendations, certainly something to encourage participation from the community. But our goal would be to try to have some preliminary recommendations because we think that would definitely encourage participation. So we will try to see if we can guide the discussion in that direction. Thank you, everyone. And the next call will be in 2 weeks at the alternate time, and we'll send out notices. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie.
Thanks, Julie. Looking forward to the conversations.